The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
24 hours a day, 7 days a week. The news never stops. Life goes on around town and around the world. You need a talk show that keeps track of it. A program with bold opinions that's always open to your views. That is this show. Welcome to the Mark Davis Show on 660 AM. The Answer.
All right, everybody. It is the 8 o'clock hour, and we are glad you are here. 866-660-5759. All right. I told you there was a premise I was going to lay down, and I'm going to do this, even knowing that we have Attorney General Ken Paxton at 835. And at that point, we'll sort of pause and look at the AG race. Or actually, maybe there's one of these things I will mention to Attorney General Paxton, because it is a law enforcement-related story, and that involves ticket quotas. I told you that I was going to mention a little something about this, because Dave Lieber, a longtime friend of mine, a longtime consumer affairs writer, first the Star-Telegram and now at the Morning News, ran across a 13-year veteran of the police department in Richardson who did not hold back. And the effect of this is the city promises to investigate. Mm-hmm. So we'll take a look at that in literally a couple of minutes, because as a dovetail off of what Mike Gallagher was talking about at the end of our segment. When you wake up every morning and you dive into like the latest crazy things that the left is doing, and you take a look at the various crises in progress, fuel shortages, the Middle East on fire, inflation about to eat up your checkbook, you know, relief money being dumped indiscriminately on people so they don't even get off the couch and go get a job, crime waves as disparagement of police rises to epidemic levels, it's easy to get kind of slump-shouldered and depressed. Our border has collapsed. I mean, it's easy to think, man, we're kind of in hell. But then you have to take a look at what the prevailing attitudes of voters are going to be. And I have to tell you, this is the wellspring from which I get my optimism that we are a unified party. Well, nobody's ever totally unified. These days, unity passes for if you can get 70 or 80% of the party to say one thing. It's like full employment is like, you know, 3.9%. Unity is like 75 or 80%. And not to hang everything around the ridiculous chapter of Liz Cheney, but about 80% of Republicans were completely and totally okay with her forced exit from leadership. And more importantly, because it's not about her, the economic and immigration agenda that we had during Trump is something that is through the roof in approval ratings. Republicans get benefit of the doubt from the public on being better, on being downright prescient on reopening states, while Democrat states lag behind. There is revulsion across party lines about the race baiting and the race obsession, the 1619 projects and critical race theory and garbage like this, these people across party lines and a whole lot of independents and moderates and centrists and such look at this and say that that's just crazy. Our border is collapsing. Crime is on the rise all across this great country. Tactical mistakes like this stupid January 6th obsession. January 6th was terrible. That uprising that burst into the halls of the Capitol, that was a horrible, horrible thing that those 800 or so people did. The overplaying of the hand, and I got to tell you, they need like, I guess, 10 Senate Republicans to sign on to some bipartisan commission for this. They better not do it. Any Republican senator signing on to this garbage is going right in my talk show crosshairs. This is a time for courage. My dog knows what happened on January 6th. It was terrible. The notion of handing this over to some 9/11 style, Nuremberg style commission so that Democrats can grandstand and make it worse than it was in order to put a shiv in the ribs of Trump and his legacy? No. No. And I think most Americans know that Democrats are overplaying their hand on that. And I got to tell you, if the economy goes south, nothing like a bad economy to benefit the other party, the party that's not in power. So that's the cause of my optimism and my what I consider to be bright prospects for 22. Love to think that extends to 24, but let's take it one election cycle at a time, shall we? Okay, Dave Lieber wrote a piece, and this was just a little over a week ago. And I just want to offer this up, and we can get started on it. Because if you ask me right now, hey, Mark, how many police departments, large or small, have ticket quotas? Now, every police department writes tickets, and they should. You're speeding, you ought to get a ticket. There's nothing funnier over the years than watching y'all argue that you shouldn't have gotten a ticket even when you were speeding. I was like, please. Now, nobody should be writing tickets for, 46 and a 45, but, vast majority of people who get tickets deserve them. Now, do they ramp this up at the end of the month in order to make the cash registers ring at City Hall? I am sure to some extent they do, but to what extent? Well, this is a pretty big police department and a darn fine police department in Richardson, Texas, I will tell you. So Kayla Walker stood before the city council and accused her bosses of violating state law by enforcing a traffic ticket quota. Dave Lieber writes, that is some brave policewoman. Ticket quotas are illegal in Texas, and Walker charged that the department had done it for decades. She told the council she was speaking on behalf of current and former officers, she said, to about 30 people. In her words, quote, the Richardson Police Department has been illegally using quotas to evaluate and discipline officers. Patrol officers are threatened with punishments for not writing enough tickets, arresting enough people, and making enough citizen contacts. How does it work? The 13-year veteran said, quote, the command staff does this under the guise of monthly productivity reports. Under state law, it's illegal for police command staffs to use quotas to evaluate, promote, compensate, or discipline. But Kayla Walker says it's happening in Richardson. Walker asked for an investigation to validate her claims, and to her surprise, she learned that the city leaders have granted her wish. At a follow-up council meeting, City Manager Dan Johnson said, quote, I want to assure you, Mayor Paul Volcker, City Council, Public, Officer Walker, Richardson PD, the concerns raised are serious matters. The mayor, city manager, and police chief Jimmy Spivey did not talk to Dave Lieber's watchdog column on this occasion. We do not respond to interview requests on active investigations. Okay, that's fine. Dave continues, a quota-driven police department can promote a greater divide between the community and the police, said Andrea Headley, assistant professor at Georgetown University, who studies police departments across the nation. Uh-oh. It's one way to increase revenue, but it benefits the police department at the expense of officers internally as well as the community. Okay, so here's this officer who says it's happening, it's rampant in Richardson. I don't mean to single out Richardson, but she did because that's where she is and that's where the story arises. So here's my question for you for a segment, and then we can carry it forward to any extent that you wish. And we're the official cops talk show. So if you want to come under the radar to me, I'll let you do that. Is this unbelievably rare, or is it just wink, wink, nudge, nudge everywhere? There are few forces of nature that are as powerful, whether an individual or government, as the urge to make money. And tickets are just traffic tickets. And citations and violations and such, it's just free money, man. That is free money. Now, I've always thought that if at the end of the month, they're running a little low, and then they say, well, why don't we get a little more ambitious about, speeding enforcement? And they're actually catching actual speeders? I think I'm kind of prepared not to care. Don't Trump stuff up, don't do ticky-tack stuff like writing a 46 and a 45. But how big a problem you think that is, the whole ticket quota thing? Is it the unspoken thing that just about every department does and nobody ever talks about? Because we'll never know, except for officers like Kayla Walker and Richardson coming out and saying, guess what? We've done it for years. All right. On our topical layer of things, 819 Mark Davis, 660 AM. The answer, 866-660-5759. Sometimes you just need some good vintage Emerson, Lake & Palmer knife edge. And when these guys came out, it was so tremendous. That big Keith Emerson keyboard arrangement, Greg Lake on the guitar and the vocals, Carl Palmer on the drums. Man, oh man, oh man, oh man, oh man. 866-660-5759. We are in Fort Worth. Dave, Mark Davis, welcome. How are you, sir?
Great, Mark. Thanks for taking my call.
Hi.
I have an issue with quotas if it's used to generate revenue for a city. If it's for a safety purpose, okay. But I don't want our police officers making decisions based on raising revenue for a city through that mechanism.
All right, question, because I think that's a principled view. How do you tell in City A, they say we expect a certain level of tickets to be written because we're trying to, you know, keep a tab on safety and make sure people aren't speeding. In the city next door, they say we expect a certain number of tickets to be written so that we can make X amount of money. Aren't those two cities indistinguishable in terms of driving their streets and sort of magically knowing what their motivation was?
Well, I guess, but I live next to a city that's west of downtown Fort Worth that writes a lot of tickets compared to the cities next to it.
Yes. Weatherford, excuse me.
No. Willow Park. Willow Park.
That's right. Willow Park buried right within Weatherford. Exactly right. On the way out there on 80.
That's where I draw the line. If it's generating revenue,
yep,
that's an issue. If it's a safety issue and it's left up to the officer,
yeah,
okay. Because, like, it's raining today.
Yep.
You can be doing 70 down the highway and get a ticket even though you're under the speed limit because the road condition changes.
I wonder how often. I remember that from Driver's Ed, 1973. The speed limit is not in concrete. That if the speed limit is 45 but the roads are incredibly slick, you can get a ticket for even doing the speed limit or even below. I wonder how often has that ever happened to you or anybody you know in real life?
No, but I do know a friend of mine that's an attorney that argued against a ticket in a school zone because it was after school hours had started and there were no kids present.
But was it within the school zone times that's on the sign?
It was.
Well, he didn't have a leg to stand on then, did he?
He absolutely does.
Why?
Because the only difference between it being 35 and 20 is that there are kids in that area.
Well, I just,
and if the road conditions have, I'm just telling you.
Oh, well, okay. You're starting another talk show, which I am more than willing to do. So the sign said, the sign said, you know, let's say it goes from 40 down to 25. And the sign said that this is the school zone between, you know, 245 and 315 or 245 and 330. And it was
and
it was within the times on the sign, but school was out and the kids were gone.
The school, school was in session and the kids were all in school. There were no kids outside.
Right. Well,
so the road condition had changed. And again, the speed limit is not written in stone.
No, the speed limit's not, but the times are.
I understand. I'm just telling you that the judge and the officer all agreed that's what happened.
Well, that's stupid. You can't have motorists. That's like allowing somebody to run a red light at 2 o'clock in the morning because I didn't see anybody. I mean, okay, all right. I love it. Multi-layer phone call. 866-660-5759. We are in Justin. Hi, Jeannie. Mark Davis, welcome. Happy Tuesday. How are you?
Thank you. I'm great. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thanks.
Good. Well, I have an issue with the tickets. In general, I feel like if they're trying to make more revenue at the end of the month, they're typically making more revenue off individuals who also are struggling at the end of the month.
Why?
A type of,
how do we know that?
Well,
what?
Okay, most Well, at the end of the month,
right.
sometimes people come up short. What I'm thinking of it as is a health issue, a mental health issue for the poor. Reason being, you pop a $200 ticket on these people
right.
who are barely making ends meet, regardless really of when it is, but especially at the end of the month when the rent's due on the first, then you have really damaged them, I think, mentally. They go to work, they go home, they're stressed.
Okay, wow.
They're
okay,
already
they're,
more stressed.
Now we have three talk shows in one. So this is magnificent stuff people are bringing me. Number one, so I see your point. At the end of the month, a couple of things might be happening. A police department that's hungry to make some money before the end of the month, but also people trying to make ends meet at the end of the month. So I totally get
exactly.
that. However, I don't see any reason to believe that the police are pulling over the poor disproportionately. That if you speed in a 1969 Dodge Dart or speed in a, you know, a Porsche Cayenne, I don't think the officer is going to, you know, view one differently than the other.
I would typically agree with that.
Yeah.
However, if you gave me a $200 ticket, I'm simply going to write a check and pay for it.
No, I understand that. So let's go to premise number two. Let's
right.
go to premise number two
okay.
is that somehow it's wrong to write tickets at the end of the month because some people can't afford the ticket. There's a wonderful solution to this. It's called don't speed.
I want to look at it totally differently. I want to look at number one, the police typically say that the most dangerous thing they can do is a traffic stop. Is that true? I've heard that's true.
Responding to a domestic, but these days with people all amped up and mouthy at the police, yeah, that ranks high too. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we are trying to stop people from speeding, from running red lights, from
right.
you know, making a stop sign where they don't, you know, full
correct.
Stop.
Right.
I really think we can use the police in a better way that's safer for them
How?
And doesn't cause issues.
How?
I don't think it's as necessary for them to spend as much time on traffic issues. I think it would be better served for them to spend more time on other issues. You call the police. They need to
no,
come.
But a moment.
But
well, here's a crazy idea. Let's have enough cops to respond to rapes and burglaries and this and that. And let's also have enough so that you can have traffic enforcement. Because the best way to keep people from speeding and running red lights is to write them tickets to stop them from doing it. I haven't gotten a speeding ticket in got more than a decade.
I'm just not sure that's something that we really need to be that focused on, to be honest
wow,
with you.
Wow, I can't imagine why not. Why in the world would we let the world know that we are paying less attention to speeding and running red lights? How in the world does that make safer roads?
Well, I'm not that interested in policemen making the roads safer
really?
By issuing tickets.
Ever had, and pardon me for going, you know, pedal to the metal. You ever have, you know, like a loved one die from being T-boned at a red light? I'm guessing not. Neither have I. But
every time I see someone speed or they're erratic,
yeah.
I call 911 and I say, I want to alert you. There
and
is a person speeding.
And that's lovely. And by the time the cops hear you and they're 2 miles away, that person is gone. There's no substitute for police eyes on reckless driving right there in front of our faces. And it's a vital part of what the police do. Jeannie, thank you. Appreciate it very much. All right. Speaking of vital things in law enforcement, how about Attorney General Ken Paxton? I may run a couple of these things by him. He joins us next. Mark Davis, 660 AM. The Answer, 832. Gordon Griffin's in the newsroom. Hey, it's Mark Davis. Springtime means spring cleaning time. And you know, there's some people who do spring cleaning throughout the house and they don't do the carpets. Ugh. You know what kind of gunk is saved up in those carpets? The rest of your house can be gleaming clean, but if you've still got nasty carpets, that is not right. Not a clean home. So let's get you cleaned up. Zero res, three rooms, cleaned $99. What a special. 20% off tile cleaning too if you do that, three rooms for $99. And air ducts. We'll do air ducts to make allergies better, make dust better. That's going at $350 per AC unit. That's 10% off. And they're just wonderful people. And they do upholstery and all kinds of other things around the house. So just call them and let them go nuts. Get your house clean. Let's go. 214-37-CLEAN. 214-37-CLEAN or ZeroResDallas.com. ZeroResDallas.com. But you bet they're booking out of Fort Worth and serving the entire Metroplex. It's the best kind of clean. And I love these guys. Zero Res. 214-37-CLEAN or ZeroResDallas.com. ZeroResDallas.com. It is 8:39 as we work our way through a rainy Tuesday morning. 866-660-5759. Seems like every day in the talk show world, we wind up with law enforcement issues. The border is a law enforcement issue. Ticket quotas, a story out of Richardson, that's a law enforcement issue we're taking calls on. Back to that in just a bit. But I'll tell you a guy who's steeped in law enforcement issues every day, and that is because he is Attorney General of the state of Texas, and that is Ken Paxton. Welcome back, sir. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, let's dive right in. I was talking to somebody the other day about having you on the show today, and they asked me to ask you, what is our understanding of the status of these from Dallas to San Antonio, these centers where migrant kids have been dumped? Is there a timeline for getting these? I mean, I know once we get them out of there, they're going to be atomized out across Texas and other states. But how's that going? And just what kind of attention are we paying to that?
Well, whoever asked that question asked a really good question. The answer is we don't know. I've been to three of them. I've been in Midland. I wasn't invited. I went with the district attorney there. And then I also have been in the one in Donna down on the border. I've been in the one in San Antonio, and the question has never been answered. These kids, supposedly, they tell me 80% of them have family members here, some really close connection, which I don't believe.
No.
And they're very secret. I mean, imagine kids from Honduras having 80% of them having connections to family here. I don't believe it. They just disappear, and we don't know where they get sent. No one tells us. Just so you know, the average cost per kid per day in the Donna facility, $729 a day. If you add that up, 1,500 kids, that's $400 million. Can you imagine it costing you to have a kid, $729 a day? I can't even imagine how they're spending that much money.
Is that all a federal expense, or are we having to shoulder some of it? Certainly just local law enforcement attention to these facilities must be something.
Oh, absolutely. There's expenses beyond that for the state, particularly law enforcement right now. But then as they move into our state, you know, they're going to end up somewhere, some in Texas, some all over the country. Then we have additional costs of education, health care, law enforcement. So the cost is massive. That's just one facility that's costing $400 million out of the who knows how many facilities they have around the country.
So, all right, let me pivot to something else, because the last time I mentioned your name on the show is just a couple of days ago, because you had paid some attention to something that we were paying attention to. And that is this unfortunate day a couple of weeks ago in Plano, where a protest that up to a point was following the guidelines and following the path it was supposed to, and then they stopped traffic at an intersection, and for some long minutes there, there was like the first cop who was there, you know, couldn't exactly have 50 protesters under control, and a kind of an admittedly hot-headed guy hops out of his car and starts to go at it with the protesters, and the way it wound up is like this guy who got frustrated and angry and maybe should not have, you know, touched anybody. I'll stipulate that, but he's the only guy who got charged with anything, and you were on top of that, saying that what we have here is a problem of local police departments who seem reticent to break up the intersection and traffic blockades of some BLM style protesting. Is that a growing problem, or is this just a one-off? What do you think?
Well, part of it, I wanted to say something about it because I don't want it to be a growing problem. I have a lot of respect for law enforcement. They've been beaten up for years. You know, they have a very hard job. They have to make these, you know, quick calls that are not easy, that sometimes relate to life and death. So I have tremendous respect for what they do. But when the message is sent, I think the police chief sent this message, not just this officer, that, you know, it's this group. We can't really move them out of the traffic. And I respect their right to protest. I think they should protest. They may have a legitimate grievance. They shouldn't be allowed to protest in the middle of a road where they might get hurt. Then a motorist might get hurt, and that just creates even more issues. So I don't have a lot of respect for that decision to let them protest in the middle of a busy intersection.
All right, so what else is going on? Border stuff, local police response to things like this. What else is filling your AG days?
So I just went to D.C. and did a press conference with Senator Rick Scott, who's been amazing helping us with the immigration issue. We had several senators there who were speaking, because I think the media is starting to like not cover some of the issues on the border. Mm-hmm. They're trying to push it to the side because it's a disaster that's getting worse and worse. So we have five lawsuits over that. We have a lawsuit against the Biden administration over the Keystone Pipeline, which you can see the results of not having gas flowing through the country and not having backup to the pipelines that we already have. And then we also recently, last week, as recently as last week, we filed a lawsuit because the Biden administration is trying to take Medicaid funds from Texas, which really means Medicaid funds are people who most need help.
So as you mentioned, a trip made to Washington. Let's talk about another trip you made to Washington. We talked to you that day. It was the fateful January 6th. And I wanted to ask you about this because here comes this January 6th commission thing. When you and I spoke that morning, you were getting ready to hop out of the hotel room and go down and be with thousands and thousands of Americans proudly and on principle standing up and saying something was not kosher about this election tally. The famously titled Texas Challenge. That's you. Saying there were constitutional problems in a number of states about rules that were broken, election law rewritten on the fly. Now, history will always observe it was very unfortunate and very bad that 800 or so people storm the Capitol, break into the Capitol, and that's terrible. What in the world is this January 6th commission where it seems to me that this is Democrats looking to make this worse than it was? In order to just retroactively beat Trump's brains in.
Yeah, this sounds like the Gestapo. It sounds like government control. I mean, these people, I was there. They were just amazing people for the most part. Thousands and thousands of really great Americans. I get to meet hundreds of them. And the fact that less than 1% of them went and stormed the Capitol shouldn't be an indictment on the other, you know, 300,000 people that went there to express their constitutional free speech rights. And had a legitimate issue about the election, which I agree with.
You know, and I've had so many conversations about it, and people have come to me and they keep telling me that all these courts found that there was no fraud and no problem with the election. That's just factually incorrect. People in various states tried to, there was no state judge that was ever going to say, I officially rule that Trump should have won Arizona, or I officially rule that Trump should have won Pennsylvania. That was never going to happen. The best approach was always the Texas approach, your brainchild, of going to the Supreme Court and saying, here's a list of rules that were violated, election laws changed by people other than the legislature. This is the basis of our skepticism of the result. Weeks now, weeks, months down the road, do you have any further clarity on why the Supreme Court punted on this?
I have no idea, because if you think about it, it makes no sense from the standpoint of what the founders intended. They didn't want us fighting each other, state on state, people on people. So they created three branches of government, one of which was supposed to hear civil disputes so they didn't turn into something worse. With states, the only place we could file, because they didn't want Texas filing against Pennsylvania in Texas, either state court or federal court. So they said, no, you can't do that. You have to file with the U.S. Supreme Court, but everybody gets their day in court, except a state that the Supreme Court says, we don't want to hear your claim. That cannot be what the founders meant, because that means that states, if the Supreme Court just discretionarily says, hey, we're not going to hear that case, we don't get a day in court. So where are we left? We have no remedy. We have no way to have our grievance heard. That cannot be what the constitutional framers intended.
All right. Attorney General Ken Paxton with us. All right. There is some recent history. Now let's talk about the future. Have you officially announced for re-election?
I have been asked that. I don't know what officially means. Every time I'm asked, I say, yes, I am running for re-election.
So okay, good.
I don't know how to do it any different.
Is there paperwork? Is there an office to report to?
No, you can't file until like November or December. So, I mean, officially, no one's running, because you can't file. You can say you're running, but you can't file until November.
Gotcha. So what you can do is answer, if asked, are you running, you can answer yes. And so we have that. Well, I talked to another guy, a guy you and I both know, and that's our buddy George P. Bush. Did you have any advance notion that he was going to come after you in the primary?
No, he didn't tell. He was going to go after Dan Patrick. And I think what happened was, you know, he's kind of got this mentality that he's going to be president someday. He's got to get started. So
Wow. That's it.
I mean, wow. So I know for a fact that he's told people that he was going to either run for governor, lieutenant governor, or against me. And initially, he didn't think he had enough money to run against Abbott, so he thought he could run against Patrick. But Patrick has about $20 million in the bank, and I don't have that much money. So I got picked, I think, largely because I don't have as much money, and he thought he could raise sufficient money to at least, you know, be competitive on the funding side. But until, like, December of last year, everybody told me, and he was saying he's running for lieutenant governor because it's his time and he hates being land commissioner.
Well, I'll never forget the day I was talking to him about land commissioner type stuff and how it is at Thanksgiving, because he likes Trump and nobody else in his family does. And he just instantly pivots and just comes right after you. And it wasn't even really on issue stuff or political stuff, but it was, you know, I'll tell you what it was about, and because I guess we're going to, you know, be going through this, or he'll make you answer it, so we might as well cover it. We've had a couple of years of securities fraud indictments hanging over your head. They've gone nowhere so far, and last time you and I spoke about that, that struck you as a kind of a nothing burger, my phrase, not yours. What's the status of that? It seems perpetually delayed, and how do you think that's all going to work out?
Nothing I can do about it, Mark. They were able to move my case out of my county to Harris County and to Democratic courts. So far, every court has ruled in my favor that it needs to be moved back to Collin County, where I'm supposed to have the opportunity to be tried in front of my peers. But the reality is, they don't have anybody to testify against me. They still haven't found anybody, and so the case just sits there in the appellate courts for 6 years. It's been there for almost 6 years. So this idea of a speedy trial that's, you know, you're supposed to have under the Constitution, it's not happening because, I mean, they don't have a case. So if they had a case, it wouldn't take 6 years. So this is all political, and George P. is political, and that's all this about. He's not going to run against me on the issues because he's not competent to do the job. I think he just got his law license back, has really no experience in practicing law, and his experience is as a land commissioner, and that hasn't gone so well with the Alamo. And with his trying to get money down to the to Houston area for FEMA funding. So he hasn't even proved himself in that, let alone a job like this that takes a lot of legal ability, which he has none of.
The other thing he mentioned is 8 senior staff attorneys in your office. They wrote this letter, making a big deal out of hitting the door. And that was they accused you of abusing the office to help a campaign donor. FBI is reportedly investigating that. What's the status of that? And who are these people? And what do you know about their motivation?
Look, these are people that should have come and talked to me. They decided they wanted to take me out. They took a shot. It didn't work. I was investigating the FBI at the time, which is kind of weird now that they're investigating me for investigating them. That's what this is. And there's a lot to that I think is not right. Because if I could have finished my investigation, we could have at least found the truth, which I think would have led to some other questions. So, you know, it's unfortunate the way the system is working, and it's unfortunate that you'll never get good coverage out of the media as to actually what happened. So you can just now accuse people of things, and suddenly you're guilty. The reality is I could accuse George P. of, you know, taking Alamo funds and putting them in a cherry where we can't find out what happened to that money because you can't FOIA that. And then the money just, who knows where it went? We don't know where that went. I could accuse him of, like, you know, fraud, but I don't do that stuff. That's what happened to me.
Last thing, and it relates to another interesting political challenge, and that is Don Huffines challenging Governor Abbott. Don told me that one of his big things is that under Biden, it's going to be real hard to get wall built by the federal government. So doggone it, we in Texas, we're going to build our own wall. Can we do that?
Yeah, I don't know why not. I mean, you'd have to do the same thing the federal government did, which is eminent domain. The problem is just money, funding. That is a relatively expensive project. So we would have to pick and choose, given we have, you know, over 1,200 miles of border. That's the challenge. We'd be funding it ourselves. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I don't know why we couldn't try it, but it would just be really expensive.
Yeah, as many things are in life. All righty, Ken Paxton, Attorney General. Thanks. We'll talk to you soon, I'm sure. Always appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Have a great day.
I will. Attorney General Ken Paxton. I'm Mark Davis, 8:53. Spring of 1987. Ladies and gentlemen of Fleetwood Mac, Tango in the Night. We'll let them take us out and into the next hour. We were doing some traffic quota, some ticket writing quota talk. Actual cop on the phone. But man, oh man, that was fun with Ken Paxton, wasn't it? A quote from Ken, or a paraphrase from Ken, George P. Bush thinks he's going to be president someday. He's got to start somewhere. Holy cow. All righty. Boy, go get the podcast and listen to that one back. Ken Paxton talking about various things in the world of law enforcement and that primary challenge that he looks like he will face from George P. Bush. Podcast go up Heck, 10:30, 10:45, Rhonda puts them up. Go to 660amtheanswer.com, click podcasts, My Happy Face, 8 o'clock hour, halfway through. There's the AG. All righty, 866-660-5759. 2 hours down, one to go. Stay safe, stay dry. It is a spring shower of topics. Mark Davis, 660 AM The Answer. Stick around, much more to come.